Blog Talk Radio.
Experience with co-host Dolly Miller Brennan.
Produced by CommunicationCreations.com.
And now your host, the notorious MJH.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It is me, the notorious MJH, and welcome to Liberty Crusade with Larry Ballard. Larry Ballard is the author of Modern Slavery and the Fight for Freedom, and also webmaster of LibertyCrusade.com. Dolly Miller Brennan should be joining us as a co-host here shortly, and we already have Larry on the line, and tonight I'll be your host, Mike Hammer, otherwise known as the Notorious MJH. Hey, Mr. Ballard, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Good, Michael. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How's that book of yours coming?
Good.
Awesome. Dolly filled me in on a little bit. She's not here yet tonight. I expect her to be here in a few minutes. She filled me in about publicizing your book. You want to talk about publicizing your book tonight?
Well, maybe not on air, but I'd certainly like to talk to you.
I'm sorry, I was misinformed. But also, what we do have to see, this is what happens when Dolly's not here. She sends me emails, and I have no idea what she's talking about. Okay, so anyway, we should have somebody calling in here tonight. Several months back, actually, still beginning in 2009, right after New Year's, so almost 2 years ago, I made a video. I walked into a convenience store around here called Wawa, and they asked to see my ID card, and when I handed them my ID card, they scanned it, you know, on the scanner, just like you scan your groceries. And, I was like, well, what are you scanning my ID for? Actually, I've got the video queued up. Let me just go ahead and play this. Okay, check it out. This is not going to be a real professional video, but just so you can get the idea. Okay, this is my driver's license. This is the back of my driver's license. This is the barcode that they like to scan, but that's not what they actually scan. They scan, this funny looking piece right here. But what I did was I took a piece of electrical tape and a razor blade and made a little black strip of my own, and I put it over that funky looking doohickey like that. So that when people ask to see my ID, when they think they're going to scan it real quick without me catching them, I just look at them like they're stupid, like, don't scan my ID. I mean, you know, why would you scan my ID? And they're like, well, to prove your date of birth. Well, it's right there. I mean, why do you need to hold it up to the scanner? Oh, well, it just does the math. Well, I asked them. I was like, well, you know, that is obviously tied into a national database. Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to verify my age when you hold it up to it. Now, don't you realize that databases exchange information? So if you're getting information from them, my date of birth, that means they're getting information from you, what I'm buying. Beer, cigarettes. You know, it's none of the government's business what I buy as long as I'm old enough. And I'm old enough, it says so right there. Yeah, I'm not sure if you could hear that video very well. But basically what I did was I took some electrical tape and cut it out, you know, cut a little rectangular shape out with a razor blade, and I put the tape over the back of the my driver's license, where if they scan it, it doesn't register. And it's not actually the barcode. It's this funky-looking mesh design thing that they scan. But anyway, now when they ask me if I have my ID,
You know, I'll say, yeah, just a second, I got to go out to the car and get it. But, you know, when I go out to the car to get my ID, I come back in with my video camera as well and have the video camera rolling because I just want to catch the expressions on their faces when they get to scan it and, they, you know, they're looking at the black tape on it and stuff. But the funny thing is, when I have that video camera running, they won't scan it. Funniest thing. They did tell me I wasn't supposed to have a video camera in the store before. But this particular store, this chain, when you go in the store, there's a big monitor, you know, right above your head as you're walking in there where they have the security cameras and everything. So, you know, I just tell them, well, you know, this is public, and, you know, it's a public place, even though private property is accessible to the public, and you're allowed to have a camera in there. You're allowed to you can take pictures of people in public. That's not illegal. You're just not allowed to record audio. A lot of people don't know that. But what do you think about that, Larry? This is what got me onto this topic. Somebody's supposed to call in here tonight. I don't know if they're actually going to show up. But that video I have on YouTube, they commented on it. The same thing happened to them the other day at a Wawa store at a different location in the city next door in Norfolk. So they're supposed to call in tonight. I told them to call in tonight when you were on because this is kind of up your alley there. But what do you think about that? When they scan the IDs, isn't that like tied into a national database? Because they say it's not, but I don't believe that.
Well, I think it is. Basically, they tried to pass the Real ID Act some time back, and it got stymied, it got pushed aside, and people need to be cognizant of the fact that it's setting up, you know, and we need to make sure that it doesn't get passed. And for those of you who don't know what that is, that's really what Mike's talking about is kind of the precursor of the Real ID Act. And the Real ID Act would see a computer chip put in your driver's license and your passport, and eventually all transactions would be reported, and basically would carry eventually your financial records, to carry your medical records, and it literally would lead to a situation where the government could literally keep you from buying food, could keep you from having health care. They can basically control your entire life. If they control your access to money, then, you know, what can you do? If they turn your chip off, you can't buy anything. And it's kind of almost in the vein of what Dolly and I had discussed we were going to talk about tonight, which was basically people look at events, and I think that the reason people aren't more upset is because they look at an individual thing like this Real ID chip, like what you just saw, and they don't put it all together in a big picture. So what Dolly and I had talked about was stepping through some major events that have occurred in history that were leading us down the road to where we're going, which ironically, Mike, is really ending where you've really started the show off, and that is that we're going to move into a society where we've lost all of our civil rights. So in context of what you just said, there was an interview done by a gentleman, he's passed away recently, Aaron Russo was his name. He was a film producer. He was a friend of Nelson Rockefeller, or David Rockefeller's, and he ran for governor and president under the Libertarian Party. At any rate, he came out and did a video, a documentary, and in that documentary, he disclosed that Nelson Rockefeller had pre-knowledge of 9/11, and then he goes on and tells why 9/11 had been done, and that was to drive us towards this one-world government, but he closes in that documentary by asking Rockefeller, why would you need to do any of this? You've got all the money in the world. You've got all the power in the world. What's it all about? And per your question, what Rockefeller said was, well, it's about getting everybody chipped up so that we can control every aspect of their lives. So I think that's your answer, Mike. We're moving towards a government that is absolutely ruthless, a government that it's going to control us. And here, matter of fact, I've got a quote. I was going to start in the 1929 crash, and maybe I can throw this quote in here to give you kind of a playback off of what the question you asked. This is a quote from a Congressman Lewis McFadden, and the context was that he was charging that the Federal Reserve had intentionally caused the Great Depression, and he was bringing impeachment charges against the board of the 12 Federal Reserve banks. And he said, quote, it was a carefully contrived occurrence. International bankers sought to bring about a condition of despair so that they could emerge the rulers of us all. And that's really what you're talking about, Mike, right there, is creating a way in which to govern us in such a way that we have lost all of our rights.
Yeah, that's kind of scary, man, because, see, what's going to happen if they try that is people are going to be forced to have to steal stuff and stuff like that, and it's just going to be chaos. It doesn't sound like there's going to be any kind of good outcome, no matter how you look at that. I mean, can't you picture riots in the streets happening if they try that?
The show that I wanted to do tonight, I had a conversation with Dolly. I probably should have called you. My computer crashed this week. I had to send it away, and they're trying to retrieve the data. The show that I had planned was a crucially important show, given what's happening right now. I called it The Empire of Evil, and it was going to start at the 12th century and work its way through. It probably would take two shows to do it and show you the people who were in control of the world in the 12th century have never lost control of the world. Now, basically, it was a feudalist society, which is not a three-class system like we have, but a two-class system with a financial elite at the top and with serfs at the bottom, or peasants or slaves, whatever you want to call them, that have virtually no rights at all. And that's really where we're headed. We're headed into a communist government. Here, matter of fact, here's another quote for you. Think about our supposed enemies, the communists, the Red Chinese, and think about Russia, and then listen to a couple of these quotes, and I think you'll see that there is a movement towards forming. Matter of fact, there's several quotes that I had in that one, in that show that I was going to do. I just don't have my database, so I can only tell you about them right this second, but I have several quotes from key legislators who tell us that emphatically our government is moving towards a super communist capitalist government. So with that, here's a quote back from the 1990s, and it's from Mikhail Gorbachev. And for those of you who don't remember, he was the head of Russia up until Russia, until the wall collapsed. And so it's in that context of a Cold War that he says, further global progress is now possible only through a quest for universal consensus in the movement toward a new world order. But we have Gorbachev, our enemy, saying that the solution is a new world order. And then if we fast forward, starting around Nixon, we start to hear presidents from the United States of America saying that the answer is the new world order. I have quotes in my book from Nixon. I have quotes from both of the Bushes. I have quotes from Obama. I have quotes from Bill Clinton and from several other legislators, all talking about movement towards the one world order. So we have the communists moving towards one world order, and we have America, a supposed republic or democracy, depending on what you call it, but it's really a republic, moving towards a one world order. And then the question, Mike, is if that happens, what's it going to be? And what it's really going to be, there's a quote from a German high-ranking official that I had in the show that I was planning to do. I'll try to give you the paraphrase of it. Yes, Dolly.
Oh, okay. I just got in. I'm in Green Bay. I had to I was doing some running tonight, and I just got in the door and isolated myself just to let you all know I'm here. Yes, we are looking forward to this show. And Larry, is there anything we can do to avert this occurring, this one world order?
Ooh. Well, yeah, I think that's really why I wanted to do this show and the next couple. I think that what we have to do is get people's consciousness raised. I mean, what I hope to do here over the next two or three shows is to take people from the opinion that, oh, there's an economic crisis, and, oh, there's unemployment, and oh, there's, you know, people are losing their houses, bring them to the realization of what that's going to mean. So Mike had talked about the RFI chips, and I had just read a couple of quotes, and basically what we're trying to do is to say that we're going to lose our Constitution. They're moving us in the direction of a dictatorship, and I was about to quote I don't have the quote in front of me because, as you know, my computer's down, so I'll just paraphrase, but a German chancellor about 4 or 5 years ago said that this was during Bush Jr.'s administration, the last term, that he thought that within the next 5 years that we would see a move towards implementation of a global dictatorship. So what that means is that we can expect that sometime during the Obama administration, we can see movements that are going to be intended to collapse the economy of the United States of America, to collapse the global economy, and when they do, they'll convene some kind of global agenda, the G20 will meet or whatever, and they're going to basically issue a new currency and try to drive us into a one-world government. So the answer to your question, I think, is awareness. If we just sit back and we allow those events to happen because we're seeing them as isolated events and we're not connecting the dots and not seeing the bigger picture, that the intent is to take our Constitution away, the intent is to enact a GFI chip in order to track us and to keep us from having even the most basic things if we don't comply, and a couple of things that just came out this week that I just found in some further research to give you an idea of where they're going. In 1929, maybe most of you, I hope, know that Roosevelt passed an executive order that made it illegal for us to keep our gold. And you could either be fined $10,000 and or put in jail for 10 years. Well, here's what our government does. They don't pass caustic bills like that. They either use executive orders or they bury them in other things. So the stimulus bill we talked about a week or so ago was used to hijack the educational system by basically taking over the student loan program. But just last week I was doing some more research, and I found it buried in that 2,000-page document a very, very disturbing clause that is a Trojan horse for repeating the confiscation of our gold. It essentially basically requires the registration of the sale of gold above a certain amount. And so basically once you start to track the amount of gold that you have, now you're in a position to basically know how to confiscate that gold. And so they're moving in all directions to basically take away our liberty and to drive us into a communist society. And the answer to your question, I think, is that if we sit back and we wait too long and they execute before we move, then the only outcome is going to be civil war. And then one of the things that I – go ahead.
My interest is in today. I noticed that there was some news out regarding America's third war on terror, and that's along the borders. Well, I see this as the back door, as the allowing of terrorism to flourish through inaction. And if things would become so serious that we would have to call in UN troops to patrol the border, it could grant the president more authority. I can see that as happening. Do you see any possibility that I'm wondering if Obama just isn't going to up and resign? And
to that last part again,
message
you think
everywhere.
Obama might resign? Is that what you said?
I'm wondering.
No, I don't see Obama resigning, and that's what I see happening is Obama is now evaluating what his next moves are going to be. Is he going to do what Clinton did after Clinton took a midterm beating like he did, and is he going to go more to the center, govern from the center, and be more in line with the American people, or is he going to do as Pelosi is clearly stating, basically stay the course and remain to be inflexible and intolerable? I think he's going to basically remain inflexible and intolerable, but I think that the real answer as to what he does is going to come in the next few months when he figures out whether or not he's electable in 2012. And if he figures he's not, then I think we're going to see more radical movements. And what you just said reminded me of a quote from
Hey, what do you see? Nancy Pelosi borrowed Bush's slogan there, you know, stay the course.
Mm-hmm.
Did she actually say that?
I didn't hear it. Although I remember the person I was trying to think of, Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger had a quote not too long ago, and what he was saying was that the day will come. Right now, if UN troops were to come into America, they would be resisted in the gravest fashion. But he said the day will come when social disorder will be such that they will welcome them. And I think that's what they're trying to create, Dolly, to answer your question, is they're trying to create a situation where they can bring UN troops in here and the border is one of those instances, and the other instance is the collapse of the economic system. And one of the other things that I came across this week that I was so frustrated because my computer crashed, and it was what I wanted to bring out. I'll get you the actual quotes, you know, when I get my computer back. But basically, I came across something else disturbing. Not only, you know, are they making provision to be able to once again confiscate our gold for all of those you've been out there paying $1,000 to $1,300 an ounce for gold, but also what they've done is established 10 regions, and those 10 regions are basically for deployment of troops in the instance of social disobedience. And so basically they're setting up the structure so that if the economy collapses, and as a result of the collapse of the economy, there is major social disturbance, the likes of which you were talking about, riots in the street and what you might call a civil war, then they're making provision to incarcerate the protesters and put them in camps. And, you know, we're moving into an era that's very, very, very scary, where I think that, you know, we won't emerge out of it. If we go into that, we won't come back out as the free country that we think that we are now, or we think we are.
Well,
go ahead,
I know,
Dolly.
When you mentioned awareness, I'm wondering if what they're trying to do is hijack the awareness. Rockefeller said, and I watched the quote on TV, he said, we need to shut down Fox News because they're frightening people. Al Sharpton said we need to shut down Fox News because of race baiting. Hello? Is that calling the kettle black or whatever? No pun intended. And George Soros said yesterday, and I watched him say it, this president is not following the line. If he isn't prepared to do what we need, we're going to have to get someone else. I found those remarks terribly scary. It's if they're trying to steal our awareness. If there is no news out there, if you have a state-run agency, such as you do in Russia, I mean, you're not going to know what's going on.
Well, I think it's even worse than that, Dolly. I mean, as we've kind of touched in previous shows, they've been controlling our awareness for a long, long time. And I think we went back and we talked about the Rothschilds and how in 1917 they effectively hijacked the media anyway by purchasing the 50 largest media houses in the country and putting their own editorial staff in and giving us basically spoon-fed journalism that basically led us in directions. But where I think we're going is we're going from being fed spoon-fed half-truths and little bits of information that are designed to take us in a direction to where now there's an awareness coming, especially out of Fox News, and so then they intend to shut it down. And that again shows you the kind of government that we're headed towards. I mean, basically, I've had some experiences that a lot of Americans haven't had. For example, within a month of the time that they started to allow travel to China, I was over there, and I spent a month. I traveled over half of the continent of China. And, you know, this is a nation that has vowed that they will take us over and that they will do it no matter what, and then they'll do it without even firing a shot. So how are they doing it? They're doing it economically through the trade system. But one of the experiences I had there is I went through several of their sweatshops, and we haven't had working conditions like that in this country since the 18th century. But, you know, they don't think a thing about it. So those goods that we buy that are coming from China, you know, most Americans don't stop to think that they're being made by people that are almost literally slaves. And then the other thing that happened while I was there is there was an incident at the airport, and you would never see this happen in the United States, folks. And that's what I want to try to get across, is the difference between a communist government and what we have right now in this country. There was an incident that happened, and all of a sudden about a dozen Chinese military came to our gate. We were basically on a tour. We're the only Americans in the entire airport. They surrounded our gate. They stood there. We weren't allowed to leave the gate area, and they stood there with machine guns, and we were incarcerated in that gate for almost 3 hours while whatever was being worked out was worked out, and I mean to tell you, we were scared. And you'd never see that in this country now, but I think in the future, you're going to see UN troops on this soil, and you're going to see You're going to see Americans carted off and put into detention camps, and you're going to see basically the emergence of a communist government in this country. Here, I want to find a couple of quotes to read you. This is from...
Well, you were discussing slavery in China. I know in mm-hmm. India, and I've researched this, they start them working at 7 years old, and they lock mm-hmm. them up inside the factory. Now, they sleep there and they eat there, and they lock the doors and they don't unlock them for their 14-hour period. And then these children not only are not getting an education, they're saying, well, but they're helping their parents. You know, they're making money to send to their parents. And if you buy goods from India and China, this is what you're buying. You're buying into child slavery.
Yeah, and they have a similar situation in China. It's a little different. They bring the peasant girls in, and the peasant girls are put into factories. They live in dormitories, and they have very, very little rights, very little rights. Like I said, you've never seen, unless you've been there like I have, you've never seen the kind of conditions that these people are exposed to. I haven't been to India, but I did spend, I spent an entire month in China, and I traveled over half the country, and we've never encountered anything like that. But that's what we're going to see if we are subject to this one-world government. Here's a quote from Ron Blum, and for those of you who haven't kept current on your politics, he's our current manufacturing czar under the Obama administration, and he says, we know that free market is nonsense. That means capitalism. We kind of agree with Mao that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun. Now, I want to go back, and I want to read you two other quotes to give you just how scary that is. All the way back to the founding of the Industrial Revolution, I picked out some quotes here that are very short so they can be kind of succinct and kind of jab you. This is Henry Ford, and he says, the one aim of these financiers is world control by the creation of an inexhaustible debt. Now I want to read you the one that I hope will just scare you to death and raise your consciousness up and get you off of the couch and get you out and doing something before it's too late. This quote is basically from David Rockefeller, and I want to go real slow when I read this, and I want you to really think about what this means. It says, whatever the price of the Chinese Revolution, he's talking about Mao's revolution, it has obviously been successful not only in producing a more efficient and dedicated administration, but also in fostering high morale and community of purpose. So basically, they've pulled these people together with a purpose. And what's that purpose? That purpose is to basically collapse us. It says, the social experiment under Chairman Mao's leadership is one of the most important and successful in human history. Now, for those of you who don't know history, that may not sound like a frightening quote, but that's David Rockefeller. That's one of the most influential families in the United States of America that are involved in the Trilateral Commission and the CFR, and they've had people in politics in their family forever. And basically, he's saying that it was one of the greatest social experiments of the world. And what was it? It was an experiment in which Mao said, "I am willing to kill up to half the population of China in order to create a new order." And in fact, 67 million people died under Mao's reorganization, and there was a similar reorganization that occurred under Stalin. And now we've got our government saying that we believe in that form of government, and that we believe that power comes out of the barrel of a gun, just like Mao. So, folks, I guess what I want to say is, where does that leave us if that's what our politicians believe, and if they're proud to have seen a movement that killed 67 million people, then what do you think is going to happen to us if we sit back and do nothing and this economy collapses and then we rise up? We're going to see people put in concentration camps and we're going to see people killed. That's all I can say. Dolly, go ahead.
So in regards to doing nothing, as we saw in the elections, they made some changes. That doesn't mean anything's going to change. They made some changes. As you've said, is there any way that you see that we can use our current political system and still keep it true, to keep it honest?
Well, the only thing I can say right now is, I mean, if we make it to, there's two answers to that question, I think. If we make it to the 2012 election, then we can have a whole show on what the agenda should be for the American people going into to the 2012 election. And so I can touch on that just briefly. I mean, basically, the first objective we have to have is to get all of the current politicians out so that we can get the special interest groups out, which means basically the finance people. And then after that, then we can go through, I've got about a 20-point plan in my book. We can go through those systematically. They have to be done sort of in a sequence, in an order, but basically it's just restoring, in many instances, what's been taken away. But what's
all I'm trying to do is get some of the listeners, okay, this is what you can do. You can contact your representative, the new one that's gone in. We want you to vote for term limits, as Thomas Jefferson said there should be. Term limits.
Yes.
You cannot have a Charles Rangel with 20 terms. To vote for term limits and keep turning over that fresh blood. Thomas Jefferson said you need a revolution every 20 years. You need fresh blood. So not a revolution, perhaps, but term limits, is that something that a person can do? Can they contact the reps? Is that something that you see as a viable option?
I think that as we go forward and we start to look at 2012, that we have to have a plank. And in that plank, if you want to talk about, I think the key plank has to be on election reform. So term limits is one component of it. Gerrymandering is another component of the election reform. And for those of you who don't know, basically we used to have congressional districts that were square blocks, the intent of which was that the people who lived within that geographic homogenous area would all have similar issues. But what they've done over the years is they profile, and that's what happened with our recent census, and then they put together, you know, the craziest looking districts you've ever seen, because they then contain people who are homogenous so that they can vote in whoever it is that's in power currently. So we have to have gerrymandering outlawed, we have to have term limits put in, and probably the most important thing is that we have to change the way we elect people. We can't have people spending $120 million to get elected, so the entire process for how we elect our legislators needs to be changed. That won't happen by 2012. But we have to have a plank for how to do it. And then the last thing in terms of election reform is the most important of all, is we have to get rid of the lobbyists, because as long as the lobbyists are in control, then the things that are important to the American people are not going forward. But to answer your question, Dolly, that's if we get to the election. But in between now and the election, here's what I think.
We're looking at the possibility of, if I hear you correctly, we're looking at the possibility of creating a situation in our country that is so severe, a collapse of our economy, a collapse of our borders, that Obama claims dictatorial powers and there will be no election 2012. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that they're getting ready. You got the QE2 that just occurred, and for those of you who don't know what that is, it's something that I predicted in my first book. And basically it's a situation where the debt has now gotten so large that, and this is, by the way, not by accident, this is, in my opinion, in collusion with the Chinese, and it started all the way back with the Carter administration when they opened up world trade. But if you go back to Ford's quote a minute ago, the intent all along has been to impose massive debt so that it can only result in a collapse. So what they're getting ready to do, among other things, is we just had a $6 billion printing of vapor money from the Fed, and that was basically because we didn't have enough takers to buy Treasury bills in order to secure our ongoing debt, and we're going to have more of that happening. So that's moving us into a situation where we're very likely going to see hyperinflation, and that can create all kinds of things. In the Weimar Republic in Germany, I mean, basically it caused the total collapse of the society. If it gets bad enough, it can do that. But one of the things that they can do is we may very well, in the next few months, we may see that China may refuse to buy any more of our national debt. If that happens, then we create a catastrophic event where basically the entire stock market shuts down and where we have banks closed. And when they reopen, it's very probable that the G20 has been convened and that a world political system has emerged that basically has driven us into a one-world government. So if we let it go and get to that point, then the only choice we have is basically civil disobedience, and we step out into the streets. So what I think we need to do now is we need to get a whole lot more verbal than we've been. I'd like, even though there's no election due for 2 years now, I think we need to see people writing congressmen by the millions. We need to see regular protest meetings occurring across this country. People need to wake up. I'd like to see events that were bigger than what we had in Vietnam. I'd like to see hundreds of thousands of people pouring out all over this country protesting what's happening, because if we wait until 2012, I fear that it's going to be too late.
So that's why, and that was going to be my next question. You've already answered it. So what can you do? The average person's listening. You can contact your reps. You cannot let up on them. You do not want an economic collapse. You're going to have to bite the bullet here, because some of these entitlement programs are going to have to go in order to stay solvent. And those that make a living, and they can write me nasty cards and letters, I don't care, but those that are making a living out of living on government support and never intend to work, they're going to have to get their butt out there and work. And there are jobs, even though you don't like them, there are jobs, may not pay as much, but you can do them. So if we patrol the borders, if we perhaps take that into consideration, make sure no one comes across and save these jobs for the people in the United States, is that an option?
Yes. I think we have to become far more politically involved. And you just triggered another thought in my mind. I'm very frustrated at my computer right now. I was just getting ready to post something very important on my website. So maybe try it again in 2 weeks, folks, and maybe it'll be up. It's called The Empire of Evil. And it starts at the 12th century, and maybe we can do it on the show in the next couple of weeks. But it moves forward. But my first book was basically couched around the Great Depression, and I want to couch on what Dolly was just saying. In the Great Depression, I have many pictures that I'm going to be posting in this segment on my website. I don't think most Americans really understand the depth of that depression. The true unemployment was around 25%. The duration of the depression was approximately 12 years. There were hundreds of thousands of men called hobos that were traveling the country looking for food and for work. The American family was broken up because most often the mother stayed home with the children and the man went out on the road. And basically people lived in despicable conditions. I mean, you just can't imagine. So that's why I put some pretty shocking photographs on this website. And I think people need to see what's coming, the depth of this depression. So with what Dolly was saying, what I want you to understand is that right now you were talking about dividing us. So they're dividing us based upon all those people who are receiving benefits from the government. The government is trying to make us afraid to stand up against them because we're getting handouts from them. So those people that are on unemployment will become docile. Those people that are receiving Social Security will become docile. Those people receiving aid to dependent children. So before you know it, you've got a huge segment of society that's not willing to participate in a protest. So my message here is this. All of those things go away if we have a collapse. There is no more aid to dependent children. There's no more Social Security. There's no more entitlement companies and programs of any sort, and we have a total collapse. And basically the society goes into absolute chaos, and there are homeless people by the millions, and the amount of starvation. One of the things that happened during the Great Depression is Roosevelt, who, by the way, was a socialist at the minimum and very probably a communist, passed legislation that forced farmers to basically kill their livestock, to plow under their crops, to pour their milk in the street at a time when millions of people were starving. And we're going to see those same kinds of policies enforced on us if we set back too long and wait and they take this too far, because the intent, just like Henry Ford said, is to collapse us to unmanageable debt and then to drive us into a situation where we're in absolute despair, where they can control every aspect of our lives. So what I'm trying to get across here is that all those people that are out there that are leaning to the left because of handouts, those handouts are going to be gone, and your your situation is going to be abject poverty. I mean, we're looking at a level of poverty the likes of which most Americans can't even comprehend.
So what we're saying, okay, so we're saying we need to get out there and protest, and people are going to say, well, how can I protest? You can inside your church. You can form a group to get together and write letters to Congress to go out and to hit the streets. You can do these kinds of things. You can, to avoid this public educational rap, you can homeschool your children, but it requires a commitment to homeschool. A friend of mine in the local legislature in the state put through, thank God he did it before he retired, he put through a bill that would allow homeschooling in this state. So therefore, it is a legal method, a legal procedure. So you can educate your children inside your homes. You can organize in your church. Are these viable options for the average person that says, what do I do? How do I do it?
I think, Dolly, I've talked about some of those things in the first chapter of my book. I think there are things we need to move on legislatively in 2012, but if we're looking at changing the system right now, you've just mentioned some things that are very long-term. Basically, the reason we want to homeschool is because there was a landmark case in California a few years ago where they actually declared homeschooling illegal. That was later turned over. But the reason the government declared it illegal was because they said that the primary purpose of education was to teach the children patriotism. And so that's why basically they've taken over the student loan program. But that's not going to affect change in the short term. They're looking long term, and they've always looked long term. So they're looking at changing the minds of our children. Mao said, if you give me your children for 4 years, they will never, ever turn away from what I teach them. So, yes, it's important that we get our children out of the educational system, or what's more important is we get the federal government out of the education so that we can have education that's not controlled. But that's not going to help us in the short run.
We have to get to the 2012 election. So we have to do that.
But we also can do a lot of organizing in the meantime, and some of the things you were saying will work. So what are the things that we can do? Basically, any place we can organize. So if we can organize within our churches and we can create groups and raise consciousness, then we need to do that. It can start with something as simple as one person collecting data that can tell the truth to people. Send that email out and ask your friends to send it to 10 people and them to send it to 10 people and them to send it to 10 people, and you go viral on the Internet as long as the Internet is there. Then you try to get involved in church groups, and then you try to get involved in political groups. Maybe it's the Tea Party. Maybe it's some other party. But basically the whole essence is that through every mechanism we can think of, writing our congressmen, getting involved in political action groups, talking to our friends, sending emails, and most importantly, I think, getting out into the streets in protest groups, going to every single solitary town hall meeting if they come up as we get to move towards the elections. Everything we can do to be as verbal and as visible as possible and to register our protest as vehemently as we can. Those are the things we need to be doing now. Things like homeschooling are things we need to more address in a political plank in 2012, but we need to be doing very action-oriented things right now in order to put pressure on the process if we can.
Hey, Larry, I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that all politicians that we're electing now, do you think that all of these guys are in on it? Do you think they know about this when they're running for office?
Well, that's part of what I want to cover in The Empire of Evil. I don't think all of them are in on it, no. But I think that here's what I do.
I don't want to get ahead of you. I was just going to say, because of the way the Tonight Show started off kind of half-assed and stuff like that, let's do next Friday and the Friday after that, we'll do a show called, what did you call it, The Empire of Evil?
Empire of Evil. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. We'll do Larry Ballard, The Empire of Evil. And, like I said, I don't really want to get ahead of you. Dan, the guy I was telling you about, who the convenience store dude, Wawa, Yeah, he's been on the chat room for about the past hour, half an hour, listening to you. He's about to call in. He was listening because he made a comment about what you said about the UN troops, and he has a comment about that, and he also wanted to tell you about the Wawa thing. But we'll definitely do that. Do you want to do it like that? Like the next two episodes we do, it might even go into three. We'll do Empire Evil Part 1, Part 2, and if it goes into Part 3, we can do that.
That'd be perfect.
Okay,
but
yeah,
I can still answer the question that you just asked with, you know, without taking away from that, and I think it's relative. I think that what I've seen and what I can disclose in detail is that there's a lot of money that's spent to control our politicians, and it starts off basically by identifying, you know, the Ivy League schools and the brightest and the best and the smartest, and they approach them when they're in college, and they basically offer them money and position and power and connections in order to basically say, we'll guide you up the pole, we'll build you into something. So basically they get these people when they're very, very young, and they have the most promising, the brightest and the best, and they move them in. And then what happens is some people are willing to sell them souls and others are not. But where they focus their energy most of all is the office of the presidency. So in this Empire of Evil, what I wanted to do is show that it's almost like a relay race, and I can start and show how each presidency has had an agenda that was given to them by the financial elite. That president accomplishes that agenda, which sets a framework for the next president to accomplish his piece, and it goes on. It gets progressively worse and worse and worse until where we're at now. So basically, we have to look at the office of the presidency. Then I believe that the Democratic Party has been far more penetrated than the Republican Party. It's been penetrated by the progressives, and the reason I say that is because it's very left. It's very much focused on entitlement companies, on entitlement programs, and all those things that I think ultimately collapse the economy, which is their central goal. So I look to see, you know, what parties, what groups are moving and doing things that are keeping our economy from recovering, but that are in fact further degrading our financial debt situation. And so I see the Democrats are more contaminated than Republicans, but I want to point out to the people that both parties are contaminated, because if you go back to the last election just 2 years ago, we were reeling from what Bush had done to us, and so we voted out a Republican, and then we voted in a Democrat because he said he was going to give us change. We just didn't understand what kind of change. So what I want to point out to the people
I could have told you what kind of change, the kind of change you're going to be asking for. You know, they're talking about things are going to change. No, what they meant was you're going to be standing out there begging for change.
That's exactly right. You're going to be begging for food.
Yeah, I said that when Obama was running, because you know I kind of saw where things were going, where you know a lot of people like you and a lot of people who really looked into things, you know, they kind of foresaw it. And okay, well anyway, now we have Dan on the line from Norfolk, Virginia, and he has a little story to tell, aka the Wawa guy, convenience store guy. He has a little story to tell about what happened to him when he went to a convenience store last week. And I believe he might actually have I know he has one question for you. Larry, where are you from? Where are you from, Larry?
Oh, where am I from? Chicago.
Yeah. You're from Chicago. I wanted to say Indiana, but I was like, he asked me on the chat, Dan asked me on the chat room where you're from. I was like, I don't know. He told me one time, I forgot. Okay, but here's Dan from Norfolk, Virginia, everybody. You there, Dan?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, good. Thank you. How are you?
Good.
Hey, did you want to tell us what happened to you at the convenience store the other day?
Yeah, you know, I drive a truck and deliver supplies, and I just got done with a job. Went into the Wawa, getting some coffee, getting some cigarettes, and a long line behind me, a lot of military people, because it's right outside the base. And a woman asked for my ID. Now, I'm 33. I look 33 at least. So I show her the ID, but I hold it in my hand because I've had this, you know, them take it, and she wanted to scan it. And I was like, no, you don't have to scan it. You just go ahead and look at it. She's like, well, I have to verify your age. I said, well, use your eyes. The whole time I'm holding it right up to her face, you know, in my hand. And she's like, well, I've been instructed to scan it. And I'm like, why? Why would you scan my ID? Where's the information going? And she's, you know, obviously doesn't have a clue about where the information is. And so I asked her to point to some federal law, you know, that says that I have to have my information, basically my vital information, where I live and my name and all this stuff, and I have to submit it to Wawa. Of course, she couldn't. This time there was a little grumbling on the line, and she basically gave up and sold me, you know, my stuff, and I left. But, you know, it's just like it's disturbing. And I just want to pick up on one thing Larry was saying about a question you asked. Do these people know what they're getting into? I just wanted to quote Richard Hoagland, who said the lie is different at every level. So meaning that a lot of these people, they're being lied to as well. So, but that's basically what happened.
Well, it's quite interesting that when you absolutely refused to allow them to scan it, she gave in because of the line behind you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and they're obviously, right now, there is no law saying I have to submit to Wawa my information.
Well, it's interesting.
Just proof
is
of
this
age.
Really,
just proof of age
is
buying beer cigarettes.
This really ties in exactly to what Larry said. It ties in. You've just tied it in very well. You've just tied it not and put a bow on it. The people are so placid that they're going to say, okay, go ahead and scan it. No one is going to refuse. And you had the intelligence to say, hey, this doesn't have to be done. So if you're going
something
to do it,
right,
maybe somebody behind is going to do it. That's like my first. I had a stint once, believe it or not, when I was in college as a supermarket checker. And I thought I was going to be this whiz, and I rang up a banana, and I charged a guy $118. I said, excuse me, sir. I just charged this man $118 for a banana. Y'all want to go over to the next lane? I had everybody standing in line for my lane. Hey, honey, can I afford this apple? Can I afford this grape? You know, so what you're saying is that just took me back to that day. It makes no sense, but took me back. Well, what you're saying is you have the courage and conviction to stand up to this person where someone else would just give in and say, well, that's okay, just scan it. I want to get out of here. So your story can be a model that say, hey, don't give in. Don't allow them to scan it. Stop it right here.
Actually, Dan, I'm glad that you said this because it really brought something forth to my mind that expands on what Dolly was asking before. I think what we need to do is social protest at every level, and certainly we need to defy them anytime they want to ask for our information. But you really just triggered in my mind another event here locally in Chicago that's another form of social protest that we need to start pushing immediately. What happened is basically the real estate tax adjustments just came out. And in the city of Schaumburg, all across Chicago, housing prices have dropped dramatically. Depending on where you're at in the country, it's probably 30% in many places and 50% in some of those hard-hit areas like out in Nevada where Vero Reed is at and down in Florida and et cetera. So basically the city of Schaumburg had incurred some very dramatic reductions in the value of their real estate, and yet what happened is at the state level, they simply determined how much money they needed to bring in, and they didn't make any attempts to cut spending, but simply changed the ratio, and basically people weren't seeing $3,000, $4,000, and $5,000 increases in their real estate taxes, and in reality the properties had dropped 30% and 40%, which brings me to a point I want to highlight, and that can be basically another whole show. But in America, I've been in real estate for 30 years. The American dream of home ownership is a lie. Those people protested taxes. What happened is they showed up at the assessor's office in such large numbers that they filled the entire lobby and the entire parking lot, and police had to be called in order to maintain control. That's what we need to do. At every instance in which they start to usurp our rights or start to impose taxes upon us that are unfair, We need to protest, and the more we do that, the more we're going to send signals that say we're now at a point where we are in defiance, and then that's going to make it harder for them to stand up and to push us, and then that goes back to what Mike was saying, is everybody is everybody contaminated? No, I don't believe all of our politicians are contaminated, but I think when it comes to the 2012 election, we don't know who's been bought and who hasn't been bought. And so in order to be, if we really want to make sweeping changes, I think the only choice we have is to vote everybody out. But in the meantime, it can be something as simple as what you said, Dan. Don't participate when you go to Wawa. Protest your taxes. I mean, because basically here with the tax situation, I'll take it just a step further. Let's say some of those people didn't have that $3,000 or $4,000 increase that they had just been imposed on them and they were late paying their taxes. Here's what happens. In 60 days, 60 to 90 days, they will take that house to a tax sale and they will sell those taxes to somebody who will buy them, and then they apply, it varies from state to state, they apply an interest rate on those, and you have to buy your taxes back. Now, in 2 years, if you haven't been able to buy the taxes back, you could have a property that was completely paid for, maybe $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 house. But if you had fallen into hard times because we've gone into massive unemployment and you had a debt to the government for, say, $12,000 for taxes or $6,000 or whatever, in 2 years they're going to send a sheriff to your house and they're going to take your house. So if you could have a house that was completely paid for and for want of $6,000 in back taxes, the government can take your house and will take your house, then it raises the question, do any Americans truly own their homes when the government can indiscriminately change the taxes, even when your property is going down massively in value, if they can impose massive increases, then do we have any freedoms? And so basically that takes us to the point where we need to do, just like during the Revolutionary War, we have to protest all of the taxes that are being imposed on us, and we have to recognize them for what they are. So the cap and trade, if we let that get passed, folks, that's the largest tax increase that we'll ever, ever see in this nation. So we need to oppose cap and trade vehemently, and we need to understand that if they can't get it as cap and trade, they're going to go to the FCC, and they're going to get it through the Federal Trade Commission. And so we need to be vigilant, and we need to be opposing, because the more taxes we allow them to bring on us, the quicker they're going to be able to collapse us and move us into servitude.
Well, what you're saying is protest on every level. Protest, as Dan did, they're scanning your card. Protest the taxes. Contact your representatives and tell them this is what you want, that if this isn't going to happen, you're going to recall them.
Yes.
Is this a good solution, a good option?
I think it's the best solution we have now, and then to add on to that, so that's immediate. But then the real thing is people have to get informed. And the other thing we have to do is we have to somehow or other, and maybe we can have a discussion as to how we do this on this show, we have to get people to the point that they can no longer divide us by Republican versus Democrat, liberal versus conservative, middle class versus upper class, because the only hope we have is if we can get a solidarity amongst the American people so that we can understand that we're not each other's enemies. The enemy is the financial elite at the top, the banking institutions and the government that are imposing these horrendous taxes on us that are forcing us into a financial collapse. And unless we can get consolidated and have a unity within the American population, then we're not going to raise a large enough protest. But it doesn't take everybody. If we had a third of the American people in active protest, believe me, that's based on historical incidences in history, that is enough people to make massive change occur. And that's what we need to call for, is to call for people to get up off of their couches and to get active and to basically stimulate everybody they know to join them.
So we need to try and inform people, educate them, protest, contact your representatives, make life miserable on them until they bend to the will of the people.
Absolutely. You got it.
Hey, I'm going to have to leave y'all. I'm sorry I was late. I was on my way to Green Bay. I just walked in the door, so I was able to get to a phone. I'll talk to y'all as soon as possible.
Thank you.
All right. Thank
okay.
you.
Dan, did you have any other questions here in the last closing minutes here?
Did we answer your question? Yeah, I just wanted to say that if you think about martial law and the fact that they can suspend your rights, that either means that they grant them or they are God. So
that's a good one.
You know, it's the same thing talking about will they eventually just own your house or, you know. Yeah, apparently. So.
Well, they're moving us towards, and I have several quotes, they're moving us towards a communist government. And the thing that people need to understand is that under the U.S. Constitution, which we don't really value, we have inalienable rights, meaning that those are God-given rights that we have, and we have the right to freedom of speech, even though they're trying to close down Fox News, and we need
but
that's something.
Can't they suspend them?
Pardon me?
Aren't they able to suspend them?
If they move us into a communist government, then at that point our rights are no longer inalienable. They're granted by the government. That's why I want to go into this empire of evil. We basically would have no definable rights. The rights we would be given indiscriminately by the government and subject to change at any moment in time. So basically it means that if we move into a communist government, which is where they're pushing us, that's what the one world government is going to be, a communist dictatorship, we have no rights. Basically, we're going to be flattened down to a subsistence level, and we're going to live in an oppression the likes of which the American people have never really seen.
And
so I'm glad you
gentlemen.
Asked the question.
Also, don't
that.
Let them take
see
your
that.
Guns. I was raised on city concrete, but don't let them take your guns.
That's right.
Hey, listen.
Mike, are you there? Bye, Dolly.
Okay, bye-bye. See y'all later, Mike.
All right,
don't you
thank you.
Taking any drugs
all right,
your
thank
butt.
You, Dolly.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
According to my watch, Mike, it's about 7 o'clock. Why don't I let you wrap up?
Okay, you got it. Thank you very much, Larry. Everybody join us back next week at Friday night at 7 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, because we're going to do part one of Larry Ballard's Empire of Evil. And that'll probably be you said a two-part episode, but or two-part
Yeah, I think
thing.
It's probably at least that. It's very involved. And I'd say because of my computer crash, I don't have it on my computer right now, but as soon as I get my computer back, I'll try to get it loaded quickly. But I'd encourage people to go there because if they listen to the show, what they'll get off of my website, Liberty Crusade, is they're going to get graphics to go with the text. And it's going to, I hope, what I'm trying to do is to shock people. I'm trying to take them from the 12th century when people had no rights to where we had a period now where we've had rights and we're moving into a period where we're about to once again have no rights, and they need to see the graphic depiction of that in order to understand just how bad can be. Because I don't think the American people, having lived the way we've lived for the last 50 years, have any comprehension of what life under a communist dictatorship is likely to be. It's going to be total oppression. And if you add to that, this will be the last thing I say here tonight, is part of their agenda is that they see that there's a crisis, that we have far too many people on this planet. It took 10,000 generations to get to 2 billion people, and then in 50 years, roughly, we've gone from 2 billion people to 7 billion people. And so part of this whole collapse of the world economy is going to require that they feel they have to reduce the population back down to around 1.5 billion people. And so now we're talking cataclysms, we're talking Armageddon, we're talking biblical proportions, and we're talking massive, massive numbers of people that are going to lose their lives under these dictatorships. So we'll close off with that. I'll see you next week, Mike.
All right, Larry, thank you very much. Great job. And thank you for calling in, Dan, from Norfolk, Virginia, and for Dolly Miller Brennan and myself. This is MJH. Peace, God bless, and we're out of here. Everybody have a great day and even greater day tomorrow. Later.
And, Mike, sometime or other,
I'd like to talk to
you offline about what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, which is some marketing opportunities.
We can do that, man. I thought that was scheduled for the show. I was like, why does he want to talk about that on the show? But that was just a misunderstanding. That
do you have my direct dial phone number?
I was about to grab a pen and write it down because I can see it on the switchboard, but I don't ever write them down because actually, as soon as I hang up, I can give you a call if you want me to.
Okay, why don't you do that? Why don't you hang up and then give me a quick shout, and I'll tell you what that email from Dolly was all about.
Yeah, okay, no problem, Larry. All right, just wrote down your
number. Talk to you in a few then. Take care.
Okay, I'll give you a call back right in a couple of minutes here, okay? All right. That was Larry Ballard, everybody, and I think I already closed. But it's just like that sometimes. We just keep running on and running on and running on, and that's the best part of this show because you can do that here. We don't have producers yelling in our ears and stuff like that. It's time and, you know, all this 12 seconds, you know, so... Yeah, we try to keep things, you know, within an hour, you know, but it doesn't always work out like that. As a matter of fact, it hardly ever does. But that's cool. All right. So I think I already said this, but thanks to everybody. Great job. And this is MJH. Peace. God bless. And I'm out of here. And join us back next week for more from Larry Ballard. And it seems like we're going to be doing a little mini-series here called... What did he say? The evil no, not the evil empire. The Empire of Evil. Yes. So join us here next Friday at 7 p.m. for episode 1 of Larry Ballard's Empire of Evil. See y'all then. This is MJH, and I'm out of here. Later. Darn it, that's the wrong one. Here we go. This is MJH, and I'm out of here. Later.
You are listening to the MJH Experience on Blog Talk Radio.
Communicationcreations.com